This podcast is supported by family history website Find My Past. What was life like for domestic servants, workers and local communities at our most fascinating heritage sites? Uncover the hidden history and buried secrets of people from all walks of life connected with National Trust places and whose stories illuminate our past and present. Discover where they lived and worked and who with in hundreds of census records from National Trust spaces for free. And find out how to explore your family's history. See where the past takes you at findmypast.co.uk/national-trust. Hello and welcome to a new series of the National Trust podcast. I'm James Grasby, a curator here at the National Trust. In our first episode of the series, we will be exploring the lives of a mysterious gang from the 1930s who had the whole nation eagerly following their exploits. However, as we'll soon discover, there was something a little out of the ordinary about these gang members. It's the afternoon of July the 17th, 1939. At Gray's Hill Hall in London, and the annual general meeting of the National Trust is being held. Members and representatives gather over tea and biscuits to approve the accounts for the past financial year. However, today there is a little tension in the air, with the spectre of war with Germany looming. Unbeknown to the people inside the building, outside on the street, three masked individuals step out of a taxi cab, clutching a metal object.
Look! There's the door! Let's go!
At this point, there is a terrible hullabaloo as one of the masked intruders hurtles towards country house expert James Lees Mill and thrusts the suspicious-looking object into his hands and then vanishes as swiftly as they arrive. Milne hurriedly shoves the offending item into the hands of the Trust Secretary, Donald MacLeod Matheson, who then, in a swift exchange, pushes it into the hands of the Chairman, Lord Lawrence Zetland.
What is this?
It looks like a metal pineapple. There's a label on it. What does it say?
Open this fruit and you will find a kernel greatly to your mind. Well, would you believe, a £100 note? I do declare those rascals Ferguson's gang have been at it again.
I say, £100. How much have they donated so far, Matheson?
I think this latest gift makes it £2,100. Bravo, Ferguson's gang!
In the 1930s, a secretive and subversive group known as Ferguson's Gang made a splash in UK society. Unlike the well-known criminal gangs of the era, the motivations and identities of this group are not at all what you'd expect. Far from engaging in theft and extortion, Ferguson's Gang were anonymous mask-wearing activists who gave donations to conservation causes in fun and entertaining ways. What sets this group apart even more was that it was formed entirely of women. And we're going to retrace the gang's steps to uncover the motivations behind these masked marauders and explore the legacy left behind. I'm not far from Chippenham Railway Station, and I've come down onto a very modern industrial estate. And in front of me is an enormous building, a temple to archives, the Wiltshire and Swindon History Centre. And I'm about to step inside and meet Daz Beetson from the National Trust Archive Department, who has arranged for me to have access to some very exciting objects.
Hi, James. Come on through.
Daz, I'm very pleased to meet you. And I couldn't be more thrilled to be here. Now, Daz, in front of us, buff-coloured box doesn't look very promising to me, but what goodies have you got inside here?
This is the first volume of Ferguson's Gang's Minutes.
There's a book in front of me, a little sort of folio with a beautiful impression of a holly leaf, I would guess, on the front.
They referred to it as the boo.
The boo?
The boo. apparently, as legend goes, they actually ran out of space on the paper, so the K wasn't added to the end of the word, and from there on in, they were referred to as the Boo.
Oh, that's sweet, isn't it?
Totally unassuming on the outside, but inside, a wonderful, wonderful collection of all of the Ferguson gang memorabilia, their minutes, their adventures.
And you've opened it up on the first page, and there's a wonderful inscription in beautiful handwriting. This minute book, volume one of Ferguson's Gang, was handed to the Secretary of the National Trust on the 27th of May 1967 at a dinner given at Shelford Mill to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Ferguson's Gang. Isn't that lovely?
So, as well as the first volume, there is actually a second volume. This was actually found on a market stall in London, wrapped in a piece of cloth, and a member of the public purchased it and then eventually worked out what it was and offered it to us.
What a wonderful story.
The piece of cloth it was wrapped in is also something else to see.
Daz, what you've unravelled, I was not expecting. It's a textile made up of a series of panels, I suppose about 6 inches square. And each of these squares has got an individual embroidery, a motto, a fabulous picture. What am I looking at?
This is the barbituric robe. So this was what the gang used in their ceremonies. And you might have noticed, looking through the minute book, that there is actually a picture of one of the gang wearing it.
Some of these panels have got a sort of medieval feel. Others are much more modern. This is a very graphic device, really, here. Looks like a trilithon of two standing stones. That looks to me to be Stonehenge.
Yeah, so Stonehenge, very important to the gang and an early catalyst for their coming together. And as you'll see from the panel just below that, they believe that England was Stonehenge and not Whitehall.
Let's wind back the clock to the summer of 1927, where we join four young women in their 20s sitting on the banks of the River Thames in Tothill Fields.
What a splendid spot for a picnic, isn't it? Just. Now, do be a good egg and pass over one of those delicious-looking tarts.
Also picnicking with them today is dear friend Professor George Macaulay Trevelyan, who's currently a year into his role at the National Trust for Places of Historic Interest.
So, how's the job going, George?
It's going rather well, actually. Now, are you ladies aware of the latest campaign from the National Trust to raise funds for Stonehenge?
Is that the national appeal that the Prime Minister is rallying behind?
Yes. They want to raise £35,000 to acquire the surrounding land, as presently there's an aerodrome and some farm buildings blotting the landscape.
The 1920s was a time when the English countryside faced significant threat from developers, as no formal planning permission was required, and houses and factories were being built across the land in their swathes. Reflecting the strong sentiments of many, a passionate young man called Clough Williams Ellis was about to write a new book titled England and the Octopus, a polemic on England's unregulated urban sprawl. Maybe, just maybe, these young picnickers could help thwart London, that mighty octopus, and prevent it from extending its tentacles into the English countryside.
Someone needs to stop these property developers from spoiling the landscape.
Yes. Can we do anything to help? We could form a gang and raise funds to help save the British countryside.
Surely you don't mean a criminal gang with threats, extortion and gangster names?
Absolutely not. We need to stay on the right side of the law, but we could use pseudonyms.
In that case, I'm innocent and she'll go by the name Bill Stickers.
I would like to be known as Sister Agatha after that day at London Zoo when I dressed up as a nun.
I shall go by the name of Red Biddy. I am a practising communist after all.
I just want to be known as Kate O'Brien the Narc.
Henceforth, from this very day, we shall be known as Ferguson's Gang and must solemnly pledge to safeguard our anonymity until the end of our days.
To Ferguson's gang! We don't know that they actually contributed directly to the Stonehenge appeal, but if you look back again into the Minute Boo, you'll see a receipt there for their first ever donation to the National Trust.
Oh, yes.
For £5.
That is wonderful. And on the opposite page is the minutes of the first meeting of the Ferguson's gang. And at the top it says, Ferguson's gang at Shelford Old Mill. I'm going to head off and see it now. Daz, thank you. It's been wonderful.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
The gang yearned for a project they could truly sink their teeth into. And the perfect opportunity arose when Bill Stickers and Sister Agatha found themselves on a bus to Guildford in September 1931, en route to visiting their dear friend Arthur Godwin Austin. During this journey, an old watermill caught their eyes. In a twist of fate, the mill had been in Arthur's family for generations. However, plans were afoot to dismantle it. In a heartfelt appeal over tea, the women persuaded Arthur to let them rescue the mill. However, to secure it and fund repairs, the gang would need to raise £500. And so Shelford Mill would become the gang's headquarters, a place to hide away and plan their stunts in secret and hold strange initiation rituals. That was a very nice drive, actually, from the Wiltshire History Centre at Chippenham. And I'm just approaching what I think is Shelford Mill down a little side street. We come through Pretty Guildford, and this is a magnificent building. I mean, three stories, brick built, ground floor, probably timber framed above, tile hung. I know that it's currently being worked on, so there's no public access, and I'm hoping to meet Polly Bagnall, who's the author of the book The Remarkable Story of the National Trust Gangsters, and has a very close connection to the gang. Now, look, if I go this way, through this little gate...
Hello?
You must be Polly.
Do
lead the
come
way.
On in.
Through the entrance. Oh, the rushing of the water.
Yep.
And in front of us is an undershot water wheel.
Yes.
So the water is running under our feet.
Exactly.
At quite a pace.
It is.
It's got the most wonderful smell. Beyond this brick wall is the water wheel that we've just passed. In front of us is what looks like an oak shaft. I mean, it's the size of a large tree. It's enormous cogs and spur wheels and gears.
Mind your head.
Going
We're
going
to go up through the trap door here onto
right.
the first floor.
Polly, I get the sense that you know this place pretty well.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. I grew up here. All my childhood was spent living at Shelford Mill, and my mother, who died last year, lived here till 97 years of age. So my family have been linked to the mill since 1932.
Polly, I'm longing to hear about your special connection with Ferguson's gang.
My connection is my grandfather, John McGregor. He was a conservation architect, and he was contacted in about the early 1930s by the National Trust and asked if he would look at this old water mill. Ferguson's gang wanted to take on the mill and give it, with money to repair it, to the National Trust. And he was super enthused. They all got on really well and they gave him the title The Artichoke. And he went on to repair several other buildings that they took on.
And Polly, tell me what these gang members were like.
Well, the head of the gang was a woman called Bill Stickers. Well, that was her gang name. Her name was Peggy Pollard, and she was superbly bright. Went to Cambridge, and she was the first woman to get a double first. I mean, she wasn't actually awarded her degree until the 50s, because women weren't allowed to have degrees then. When she moved to London after Cambridge, she was introduced to Brinny. Brinny was to be Sister Agatha in the gang. So they were the first two founding members of the gang, and then several others joined. There was Red Biddy, who was Rachel Pinney. She came from a very wealthy family. And probably the most conventional was Joy Gaze, who was called Kate O'Brien the Narc. Now, the person I really like, the bloody beer shop, is Bloodiness, or is B. She was the gang's spiritual leader. She invented these rituals, and she had a staff, she smoked a pipe, and she was altogether an incredible woman. But according to my grandparents, they were full of fun. They were really interested in the history of England going back to pagan times. They weren't really particularly interested in modern life, and for them, taking on this mill was an exciting adventure.
Fabulous.
Okay, James, so this is very important. Mm. This millstone and the piece of wood around it, this thing comes off, and right. You can sit five women fairly comfortably in a circle over the millstone, and this is where they had their meetings. If you look at this, this is a copy of the Boo, their minute book.
March the 26th, 1932, first meeting. Present, Ferguson.
Yes.
Sister Agatha, what's that?
The Bloody Beer Shop, mm-hmm. Bill Stickers, Kate O'Brien TN, that means the narc, and Red Biddy.
Right, chap, settle down. Welcome to the first meeting of Ferguson's gang. To start off, I wish to pass a resolution that England is Stonehenge and not Whitehall.
Hear, hear! England is Stonehenge and not Whitehall.
Yes. Let's sit down around the grindstone, make some plans, and draw up our constitution.
Yes, this is a very good idea. I'll start. Rule number one. Ferguson's gang shall be known as Ferguson's gang.
Yes. Rule number two. The object of the gang shall be to follow the precepts of Ferguson in destroying and frustrating the octopus. Rule three. The gang shall consist of no more...
So here they all were, sitting on this bench where we are now.
Yes, and you haven't heard. How come I said five women and yet that's six, including Ferguson?
Ferguson.
Who was Ferguson?
Who was Ferguson?
Well, follow me.
Lead the way. Polly, we've come to what is really a small, little, intimate bedroom, isn't it? Looks like a little sitting room.
This is what we call the gang's room. What you've got here is you've got some old bunk beds, just two beds. Now, there were five of them, so they were quite cosy when they slept the night here.
Little primer stove for cooking on, bunk beds to sleep in, a table laid for tea with a pretty embroidered tablecloth. And look at this, a display case full of goodies.
Come and have a look. Here is Ferguson.
Ferguson.
It's a red stamp that says Ferguson.
Ferguson.
That Ferguson. Is all we know of Ferguson at their meeting.
How mysterious.
That is the mask. They delivered money to the National Trust in masks and capes, which is why a lot of people thought they were a group of men.
But why were they so eager to obscure their identity?
Well, partly they had sort of normal lives outside. For example, Joy... She worked in a girls' school and she had to probably be quite sort of sensible. And this is something that Brinny told my mother, that it was just fun.
Polly, in front of me, you've got some cuttings taken from newspapers from the 1930s and the headings are wonderful. Ferguson's gang again, £200 for the National Trust. What have we got? Masked woman gives £500 aid for National Trust. Mystery band with terrible names, complete endowment, a beauty spot. This is wonderful stuff. Polly, give me a sense of where the money came from.
They didn't have money, but Bill's mother, Black Mary, she actually did donate quite a bit of money to the gang. But what was really clever was that they had subscribing members. So anyone, you, me, could join the gang, choose our gang name, but we had to pay 2 and 6 every year for our membership. And that's how they filled their coffers. And they filled their money tins, saved it, took it in bags, filled it up, the swag, drove across London 100 miles an hour, arrived at the office of the National Trust, barged their way through reception. There, another £100 towards the repair of a National Trust property.
Fabulous. So Shalford Mill was the first property. Where did they go from here?
Well, Newton Old Town Hall on the Isle of Wight. It's a beautiful little Georgian building that had been abandoned. It was covered in ivy and it was just going to turn back into the fields around it. So Bill and the rest of the girls made their way to this little town hall on the edge of the island, and they said, yeah, let's take that on. So my grandfather, the artichoke, came down and he oversaw the repairs. And so that was the second building. And then they discovered some old cottages in Oxfordshire, Priory Cottages, which had been an old abbey. But in addition to these three buildings, through the enthusiasm of Bill, managed to get a lot of landowners she knew in Cornwall to give tracts of coastline to the National Trust. So, James, this is where the women slept, where they ate, where they planned their next project. But I'm going to go and show you something else. Would you like to come and see the Chamber of Horrors?
The Chamber of Horrors, Polly?
Yes.
Yes, I would.
OK, follow me.
Lead the way.
Be careful, we're going up ladders. Up here was where they had their midnight rituals. Now, particularly, it was around the summer solstice. So I've got a bit from the boo here. Would you like me to read
it? I'd love to hear it.
OK. 2:55 a.m, July the 1st, 1934. On the stroke of midnight, the Right Bloody, the Lord Bishop, Bill Stickers and Sister Agatha assembled with their weapons in the Chamber of Horrors. Solemnly swore the following oath with their hands upon the Holy Crock. So the Holy Crock was the mill shaft, and they're saying, I swear that at whatever cost, I for one will uphold Ferguson's gang. At 2 o'clock, Ag and Bill went out into the moonlight and pinched milk from the farm to make coffee. Then lighting the Etruscan lamb, that's their old paraffin stove, the gang had a beautiful feast. All practised haunting the room by the light of the moon. So, we got the sun coming in, but imagine the moon making shadows on the floor as they danced up and down, prancing and singing and chanting Latin verse. Then they went to the dawn window and they waited and watched. At 3:05 a.m, the first cock went off, and soon afterwards this Isby opened the dawn window and we watched a beautiful clear dawn with the presence of Venus and Capella.
The hauntings sound such fun. I mean, what wonderful free spirits they were.
But there were some occasions when they needed a man. The BBC did these appeals, and the National Trust wanted to do an appeal, and they asked Ferguson to come and give the appeal. In August 1935, Peggy commandeered her brother, and he agreed to stand in for Ferguson.
Ferguson, you're up next. And in 3, 2, 1...
I am Ferguson, of Ferguson's gang. I appeal to you tonight for the National Trust.
Meanwhile, Bill and the rest of the gang were gathered around the radio.
Shh, everyone. Bobby is on air.
You can do something yourselves. Whether, like Ferguson's gang, you call at the offices of the Trust in a mask and deposit a sack of bullion, or join the Trust as a subscribing member.
Well done, Bobby. Bravo.
So, Polly, what was the result of that broadcast?
Well, it was phenomenal. It really was. They raised a lot of money, they increased a lot of members, but it was the notoriety. Everyone was listening. So the National Trust, which was a small organisation, was inundated with new members, and they raised a significant amount of money for appeals. So it was really putting the National Trust on the map.
Polly, you gave me a lovely tour of the mill, and we've now come downstairs into your sitting room, the sitting room of your childhood home. And in the background, window opening onto the great mill wheel that powered this whole place. What a place to grow up.
Yeah, we were incredibly lucky. We had a very free and open childhood. How I got into all this was that National Trust had had a small group of Americans come to Surrey and they said, we'd love to see the room that Ferguson's gang used. My mother said, oh, Polly, can you sort out that room and just sort of make it look a bit more like it was when the gang were there? Then I started getting into the history of it and asking my mother about the gang. And she knew a lot about the feeling of the gang, but not actually about the facts. She knew all their real names, and that was Goldust, because no one, apart from she and her sister, were the only living people who knew who all the gang members were. And through that, Sally Beck, the writer, and myself as the researcher, spent 4 years uncovering the whole story and then putting together in a book. So it tells you, you know, more of the facts and really interesting information about all of the women involved.
So, Polly, what brought the Ferguson gang to an end?
I think it was a timely end for them. There's a record of their last meeting here, which is in 1956. And rather than the nice fountain pen writing, it's written in ballpoint pen. And they say, we're all getting old in years. You know, some of us is losing our teeth. And it was harder for them to climb onto the bunk bed to go to sleep. I think they felt that their reason for existence, their raison d'etre, was no longer there anymore. They'd done their work. They didn't need to meet as a proactive campaigning activist group.
And Polly, I'm longing to know, when they disbanded, did they keep the secret of who they were?
Of course. Well, all except for Bill. Peggy couldn't keep quiet. She did reveal eventually in 1996, the year she died, that she was Bill Stickers of Ferguson's gang.
And it feels like a fitting end to the story. Wonderful story. What do you think the legacy is of the Ferguson gang?
They started in 1927. Before there was any register for buildings at risk, before there were any acts that stopped development like the Green Belt. And this group of women, they really valued city life. They loved partying in London and the Slade Art Balls, but they loved the countryside as it was. Darkness, night, where they could look at the stars. They loved these buildings that tell us so much about the history of this country. And that's what they wanted to preserve. They wanted to make a distinction between city and country. They didn't want the tentacles of the octopus just extending everywhere. And that is their legacy. We have a Britain that values open space and access to all.
We hope you enjoyed this episode about Ferguson's gang. To catch every episode of our new series, please follow the National Trust podcast on your favourite podcast app. We genuinely appreciate your ratings and your reviews. While Shalford Mill is not open to the public at present, you can still experience the legacy of Ferguson's gang by taking a walk along the Mayon and Treviscan cliffs in Senan, Cornwall, or by visiting the old town hall on the Isle of Wight. Alternatively, simply enjoy a stroll at one of the National Trust's many green spaces. If you'd like to find out more about the gang, follow the links in the show notes. And until next time, from me, James Crasby, goodbye. This podcast is supported by family history website Find My Past. Unearth untold stories and secrets of real people who once walked the historical places now under the National Trust's care. Discover how they lived and worked and who with in hundreds of census records for free. And find out how to explore your family history. See where the past takes you at findmypast.co.uk/national-trust.